Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. It's Jesse Green here at the control panels, as always, and today, in episode 118, we're talking about tax. Yes, ladies and gents, you heard it first, tax. We are approaching the end of the financial year, and it is customary to look at our affairs, to look in retrospect what went well, reflect on what we did, and equally to look forward. And part of that planning is to examine our taxation structures and to make sure that we are operating as efficiently and effectively as possible in that department. Today, I'm going to be joined by Adrian Hill, who is my personal accountant, and he's going to be sharing with you some information, some tools, some strategies that you should really think about applying to your own business if you are indeed a practice owner. And as always with an episode such as this, I'm going to encourage you to treat this as general information only and to make sure you seek specialist advice from your own independent advisor. I can tell you though that what Adrian shares is absolute gold and you're going to want to have a pen and paper handy. It's really, really practical and useful. Now, on a different note, newer listeners to our show may not be aware, but we have our sister Facebook group, the Savvy Dentist Facebook group, where we share training, tools, techniques, and you might want to come along and join us there. Head across to drjessegreen.com/Facebook. Come and join the community. Come and learn about the training and the tools and the tips and the strategies that we share there, and we'd love to see you in that group as well. But for now, here's Adrian Hill. Have your pen and paper handy. You're going to want to get a sore hand because there's lots of stuff coming your way. And here he is, without any further ado, Adrian Hill. Adrian Hill, thank you so much for coming on to the Savvy Dentist Podcast and hanging out with us. How's things in sunny Melbourne today?
Very good. I wouldn't call it sunny Melbourne at this time of the year. Cold Melbourne. Everything's great, thanks. And enjoying at the moment trying to minimise some tax for a lot of our clients.
Yeah,
before the 30th of June.
Well, it's a busy time for accountants. And the good news about being in Melbourne, mate, is don't worry, it'll be sunny in 10 minutes' time and then raining in 20. So
that's correct.
That's all good. So, mate, it is a busy time for accountants, you know, in the lead up to the end of the financial year. So for our overseas guests and listeners, we are coming to the end of the financial year here in Australia. Ours runs from the 1st of July to the 30th of June. For many other countries, that's a calendar year. But Adrian, tell me, before we get into the nuts and bolts of accounting and why that matters for dentists particularly, and obviously people will understand that to a degree, but we're going to talk about using a business as a vehicle for wealth creation. Can you tell me a little bit about your background? And I know you know me, but I really want to uncover how you got to this point because you're not the average accountant.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. And we started, I guess, wealth creating was what was word. I don't like using that word, but it's probably the best word that people can associate with. We started to plan for the future and do things that are going to create wealth for ourselves and our family long term back in the late 90s, when we started attending every seminar known to man and reading lots of books and all that sort of stuff. Back in those days, myself and my wife, Anita, who I run our business with, we were hardworking employees and we knew there had to be a better way. So we started doing a lot of homework and going to a lot of events and seminars. And then we started back then, we tried lots of things. We did options trading, share trading, and a whole host of other things. And the main thing that worked for us, the only thing that's aside from business that's worked for us, was buying long-term buy and hold properties in good locations that have a track record of growing. So we started doing that in the early 2000s. And around the same time, I attended a seminar that was put on by another accountant who was not doing much accounting anymore and was getting into the same space. And he said he had a lot of trouble finding an accountant who understood all this and thought differently and was not your average accountant. So because we'd done a lot of seminars and were doing things differently and we really understood what he was talking about, we got talking, and then it led to, in effect, us going out on our own and starting our own business, and he referring his mentoring clients to us on the eastern seaboard of Australia, which is Brisbane, Sydney and Melbourne. So that's where we started our business, which is, scarily enough, about 14 years ago. Gee, time flies when you're having fun. And sort of just evolved from there, because we initially started with a lot of people who were obviously investors and who had self-managed super funds. And we got stuck working with them and helping them out, minimizing their tax and et cetera, and growing their wealth with them and helping them, doing so tax effectively. And then it evolved over time with our own experiences and through running our own business and our mindset being what it was, that we started to niche down and move a little bit away from investors. And in the last sort of 5 years or so, have solely been focusing on small business and in general terms. And obviously dentistry is becoming a field of our expertise, right? And has in the last couple of years. But prior to that, it was just, you know, general small business and getting involved and passing on some of the knowledge we've gained from running our own business, together with the tips and tricks that come with that to maximize the power of asset protection and tax minimization to help grow your wealth tax effectively long term. And it's just gone from there and things are great. So we're in the space we're in now where, to be frank, to summarize us up, when we started our business, Nita and I looked at each other and said, we are not going to be like any other accountants, because we are not like any other accountants. So whatever they're doing, we're going to do the opposite. And we set ourselves up accordingly. We wear casual clothes and we run ourselves out of a converted house, not on a main street, because we're word of mouth people. We're not people who come in off the street and see us. So everything we do is probably the direct opposite to what a lot of accountants do. And we're happy to be that way because that's what we want to do. We want to be different, and we are different, and we think different, and we want everyone to benefit from that. So that's us in a nutshell.
That's classic blue ocean strategy right there. Do whatever the herd is doing, do the opposite. So I love that.
And we're investors ourselves. Sorry, I probably should have said that. We have been, and from that day forward, we've been investors, and we are passionate investors. So that's an important part of this.
Yeah, cool. So Adrian, just to set the scene, what I thought I might do is for the listeners of the show to tell a little bit of a story about how you and I came to meet. We came to meet a few years ago and I was introduced to you via a mutual friend, and we'd kind of danced around doing some work together, and I was looking at moving my accounts across. And then, I don't know how long ago now, I got the mail. I got a letter in the mail from the Australian Tax Office. Bless their cotton socks. And if you're listening, anyone listening from the ATO, I send my highest regards.
And from me too, while you're at it.
Yeah. But I got a letter in the mail, which is a tax bill, a rather large tax bill in the six-figure kind of numbers. And I think the thing around that was not so much the bill itself, it was the lack of communication around that. And for me, that was the impetus to go, you know what, I really need to do something differently. And that's what prompted me to come and restart those conversations with you. But what I want to talk about today is, because you've been instrumental in helping us really redefine our tax affairs, really focus in on getting the best possible return on effort from our businesses. We own a couple of businesses, and really make sure that a lot of the money that we generate stays in our own pocket, obviously legally, and using everything that we can within the parameters that is legal and moral and ethical. But I wanted to start off with your views on business as a vehicle for wealth creation. My personal view is there is no better vehicle to generate the cash flow. But do you see some of the mistakes? What are some of the common mistakes you see small business owners making in relation to their tax affairs? What are the common mistakes you see?
I'll start with an obvious one from my point of view is the bookkeeper and the accountant play a crucial role in your affairs. Because A, the bookkeeper tracks everything you're doing, and the accountant is like the overseer of the results of what the bookkeeper's putting together, and also your overall strategic direction and focus and setup and all that sort of stuff. So one of the common things, I see is A, the structure that they're trading in is not necessarily appropriate. So for example, what I mean by that is, there's two things I focus on from a structure, okay? And it's a combination of both is what you're after. One is it must provide the best asset protection you can get. So without getting too detailed, asset protection, what I mean there is by you running your business, you are not risking or putting on the line anything you own outside of the business. So that's what I call asset protection. So you need to have good asset protection, and quite often the structure is because you're wanting two elements. One is asset protection, and the other one is tax effectiveness. So minimizing your tax and maximizing your tax flexibility is another thing you want to get out of your structure. So you really want a combo of both. Now, quite often, one might be there and the other might not, or in some cases, neither are there, right? Which is massive, because then we've got to go about fixing that really quickly. To me, those two things are often done, one or two of them not done very well at all, and they haven't had any conversations around that. And the other part of it, flowing through from the structure, generally speaking, is you've also got to have the right structure in play to maximize your ability to buy long-term growing assets tax effectively. And quite often that hasn't been factored into their thinking, because they haven't had these conversations with their accountant about their overall structure and plan and strategy and how buying growing assets factors into that. And the other thing that I see a lot of is businesses do not claim anywhere near what they're able to claim legally. So, you know, I'm not talking about illegal, I'm not into illegal at all, but they don't get advice and have not been given advice on maximizing their legal deductions through their business year in, year out. And that's probably the biggest thing I see the most of, is the lack of knowledge and awareness of what they can claim and how they go about maximizing their tax deductions through their business legally.
Yeah, and certainly my experience, you know, when we did a bit of an audit of our tax affairs, is we had a lot of things that were working well, but one of the things that we didn't do so well was maximize those deductions. And certainly we took some advice from you on how to do that legally and appropriately through the structures we had set up. So, okay, so the two issues you've spoken about there really is making sure you've got the right structures in place from an asset protection and a tax effectiveness and tax flexibility point of view, as well as making sure that you deduct the things that you can legally deduct to minimize your taxable income. So from your experience seeing businesses operate, and you know, not just around tax or asset protection, what else do you think is the cause for some businesses to come unstuck? What other areas and errors do people make when they're running their business that you see? And you can look at the books. You must look at thousands and thousands of books.
There's things like, say you're, like in our case, Anita and myself, Anita and I are running our business, right? Quite a few of the businesses have both of them would be directors of the business, which is not good. You don't need that. And from an asset protection point of view, look, it's too easy to generalize. Sorry, I don't want people to read too much into this conversation, but it's something you need to really look closely at in making sure that you always try and have one person who runs the business effectively on paper, and the other person is the one who just sits back and just does the work and is an employee and has no say in it legally on paper and running the business. So that's really important. Things like owning their homes. A lot of people potentially own their homes in joint names, whereas what I always try and do is, where possible, is have the person who's not legally running the business own the property, so that if the, you know what, proverbially hits the fan, that there's a distinction between who's running the business and who's carries the can legally with the business and then who actually owns, you know, the home and then potentially other assets as well, other properties and other bits and pieces. Because a lot of people don't pay close attention to how they're geared up. An important comment is when you set up a business, you've got to set it up in a way for death and divorce, and also for people having a crack at you, like people out there who you deal with having a crack at you. So you got to factor in the worst case scenarios to everything you're doing and have everything set up around that. And as I said, I've already harped on a little bit the structures and who's a director and who owns what property. And that's really important. There's a lot of bookkeeping mistakes. Like one of the biggest things we find now is, because we've only recently forayed into the world of bookkeeping in the last sort of 18 months, because we were getting so much pressure on us to, come on, do you do bookkeeping? I said, no, it's not a focus. But we got to a point where we went, you know what, it has to be a focus, because too many people are unhappy with their bookkeepers. And in that space, one thing you find is, as an accountant who thinks differently in everything, if your bookkeeper's running things the way they run them, and that's fine, right? But they don't think like me, and they don't think like us as a business, and they're not educated on claiming things legally and structures and your whole strategy and everything else. So they're the ones who are putting your deductions through your books. And even though you'll be educated by us, there might be a bit of a knowledge gap and communication gap between where you're at, what we're trying to do, and the bookkeeper. And the reality with bookkeeping is, as an accountant, if someone else is a bookkeeper and we do their account, financials and tax returns at the end of the year, you guys can't pay us to audit that. So in other words, you're not going to be able to justify the cost for us to audit the bookkeeping. So we have to take a lot of what the bookkeeper's done, run our eye over it, ask some educated questions based on what's in the books. But the bookkeeper plays a very important function in your ability to make your affairs function. And I've seen that more now that we're doing bookkeeping. And so you've got to pay more attention to your books.
And what about the practice owner who's sitting up late at night doing their own bookkeeping? What, any thoughts?
Yeah, I've got a really good thought for that. Don't do it. Don't yeah, do it.
Don't do it.
And I'll tell you why. Here's another thing. Anita and I, before we started our business, we said, and I have this conversation, actually, I'm glad you brought that up, Jesse, because I have this chat with every person, nearly everyone, maybe not everyone, but nearly everyone who comes on board as a new client, because our attitude from day one was, I want to do what I'm good at and I'll pay others to do what they're good at. And not only that, take it a further step. I'll use an example because I hate cleaning, right? I hate cleaning a house and I'm not a big fan of lawn mowing and all that sort of stuff. I would rather spend an hour with you, Jesse, helping you with your affairs, right? And minimizing your tax and educating you and everything else we do, right? And pay someone else to come in and mow the lawns and clean the house, because I'm better off spending that for myself and for you guys. And B, if I'm not doing that, I'd rather be down the gym, off with the family, spending some time together. I don't want to be spending that doing bookkeeping. It. Look, let's be honest here, guys. I don't know anyone who likes doing bookkeeping, except accountants and bookkeepers, right? So I would argue you're better off spending your time on your core income generation, your business, your dental practice, right? And not on that sort of stuff. And if you're not doing that, spend some time doing what you want to do. Have some fun with the family, friends, go and have a drink, go to a footy game, and get someone who's good at what they do to do that, and you focus on what you're good at. That in a nutshell, and I've had that conversation so many times. The other thing I see a lot of is, and that's because accountants generally don't focus on this, you've got to cover the downside in your business. So I'm big on risk mitigation. Now, risk mitigation is A, asset protection, so the structures, right? But B, having the most appropriate insurances in place. And C, making sure you've got quality, not cheap things, quality wills, powers of attorney, testamentary trust, deeds of mutual wills, and all that sort of stuff. Because at the end of the day, if something goes wrong, you do not want your family paying a price due to inactivity and poor advice. There's so many cheap wills out there and people try and cut corners, but when you're running a business and you're growing your wealth, you have to do it well, do it once, and sometimes adjust it, because we did ours probably 10 years ago. We adjusted them about 3 years ago, and you probably need to look at it again every couple of years just to make some tweaks. But the big dollar item and the big amount of time is the first time. Do it properly, do it once, because I've seen the negative effects of this, and it is, and that includes life insurance, income protection insurance, all the insurances as well. You've got to get it all done and do it properly, and then just go, right, breathe. My family's looked after if something goes wrong here from all levels. Because I'm serious, I reckon for every 100 conversations, this might stagger you, Jesse, 95, I reckon, have not done the majority of what I've just mentioned.
Wowzers, wowzers. And it kind of comes back to, there's that really famous quote of Warren Buffett's, and that is, yeah, rule number one is preserve thy capital. Rule number two is always remember rule number one. and so, yeah, what I'm hearing you say is, if you can mitigate that risk, protect the downside by, yes, we've spoken about structures, yes, we've spoken about effective tax minimization, but having those insurances in place, having the right testamentary trusts and wills and all those other structures in place is going to protect you, because life happens. You know, there are things that occur in life that come from left field and that can blindside us. And if we're talking about creating wealth and our vehicle is a business for creating wealth, if you lose that capital, sometimes one of the whole eighth wonder of the world being compound interest, it needs time. And so depending on if you have a blindsiding kind of event, you need time to recover from that. And sometimes people don't have time.
Yeah. And to me, I would say what makes us unique is that I like to, and we like to focus on the holistic, like imagine us sitting above you and looking down at everything they've got. We analyze the structure, we analyze asset protection, tax effectiveness, advising you on claiming things far more than what you are legally, and also helping you to have the right structure in place to grow your wealth tax effectively, and also making sure that some of the non-sexy stuff like wills and powers of attorney and insurances are actually addressed and dealt with, because it's like anything. Insurance is something you want in place when you need it. If you don't have it, it's too late. And same with wills and powers of attorney. You need all that non-sexy stuff in place, and there's no time like the present.
Yeah, absolutely. So, mate, I just want to change gear for a second, because there'll be a whole heap of people listening to this podcast who will be small business owners, and there might be some that run larger operations that classify as perhaps a medium-sized business. I wanted to ask you the differences between a small business enterprise and a larger business from the point of view of tax, and whether there are differences. Are there any particular rules or things that people need to be aware of specifically around that?
Generally speaking, the main difference is where you turn over less than $10 million. Because what the ATO, this is not me, of course, this is our good friends at the tax office, our good buddies there, they have a rule that if you turn over less than $10 million, you're deemed to be a small business enterprise. Now, the main reason I wanted to mention that is you get some tax advantages as a small business enterprise that you do not get as a, let's call it, non-small business enterprise. In other words, where you turn $10 million or more. The main thing is you get access to a lot of tax benefits, prepayments and tax advantages. Where you turn over $10 million or more, you don't get a lot of love from the tax office. They don't focus on you, and they don't, all the little tidbits and benefits that are out there mainly tax-wise. Look, yes, there's things we can do with, as in we, us, me, can do with businesses $10 million or more. But the little, some of the little tips and things you get a bit to play around with, you get more to play around with when you turn over less than 10 mil. When you turn over more than 10 mil, you can make up for it in other ways. That's definitely beyond the scope of this call, but you can still get advice through us to educate you on claiming far more than you are, but you just get less that you can play with. Do you know what I mean? That's probably the summary without getting into too much detail.
That's completely cool. But so given most people on this call are going to be in the small business enterprise category, if you were a dentist listening to this particular podcast, and we're recording this in May, it's coming up to the end of the financial year, in Australia, as I said, for the overseas audience, same sort of process in terms of planning, I guess, but there'll be nuances and subtleties around your own tax laws. But provided that if you were sitting here in Australia, we're in May, thinking about the end of June, what sort of things would you be thinking about to round out the financial year?
So what I thought I'd do is just really, really, really quickly cover some of the items I went through in my tax planning webinar that I did for Jesse and his fellow dentists. Now, this is only appropriate for businesses that are turning over less than 10 mil, which, as Jesse mentioned a little while ago, that would be most people or majority of people. So the main thing is, now this isn't, I'm going to give some examples, but I don't want you to dwell on it. If it's not appropriate, move on to the next one, right? It's just to give people some options and thoughts to think about. What it's really about is when you're a small business enterprise, you can actually prepay some expenses and claim them in the year that you prepay them. Now, you can only prepay up to a maximum of 12 months in advance. So that's really, really important. So for example, if you prepay some stuff in June, you can't prepay more than June 19 in advance and pay it in June 18. Okay. So now for some examples, and I'm going to move quickly because you guys can listen to this again as you wish. If you've got some assets such as non-luxury cars, computers and other equipment, you can consider prepaying lease payments on those as long as they're not over the luxury car threshold, which is, I don't know off the top of my head, it's about $57,000 or thereabouts. You can consider prepaying rent on your business premises, especially where your trust or super fund owns the premises. You can consider paying any deductible insurance premiums, bringing them forward and paying them before the 30th of June. If you've got any rental properties or overdrafts or income producing loans, you can potentially prepay some interest with your financier up to 12 months in advance. But just a quick side subset on that, if you're going to do that, seek the advice of an accountant and B, make sure you give the bank enough time. You want to jump all over it because it can take a bit of time for the bank to sort this stuff through. Travel expenses, if you're going to undertake any business or work trips after the 30th of June, why not consider bringing them forward and claiming them and paying for them before the 30th of June? If you're going to go to any seminars, conference, training, courses or whatever, same thing. After the 30th of June, bring it forward and pay for it before the 30th of June. If you have any annual things that you subscribe to, but normally they might happen after the 30th of June, once again, potentially bring it forward and pay for it pre-30 June. Now, assets. What happens with small business enterprises prior to the last year and a bit, or 2 years and a bit, you're only able to claim an asset where it's less than $1,000. Now, a lot of you guys should already know this, but if you don't, I will give you a little bit more information. Basically, in the 2000, it was last year as well for 2017, but it's not relevant because we're in 18. Mm-hmm. But in the 18 tax year, you're actually able to claim an asset that was less than $20,000 ex GST. So in other words, if you go and buy an asset for $19,999 plus GST or less, you can potentially claim the whole expense. The important thing is it's got to be installed and ready for use before the 30th of June. One thing you do need to know, that threshold excludes capital works costs and structural improvements. So, you know, if you're fitting out a premises, that's going to exclude a lot of the hard wearing items like kitchens, floors, plumbing, electrical, roofing, partitioning, all that stuff's excluded from the $20,000 threshold. It's mainly designed for assets that you use every day. So I'm going to give some examples, but there's far more than this. Cars, if you're buying one for less than $20,000 and you've got a high business use, because remember, you can only claim the business proportion of what you, which, you know, we can work with you in that space as well to make you understand how it works. Then other things, computers, desks, lounges, tables, laptops, anything that's you basically use every day of the week that's not hardcore. If you think about all the hardcore items I mentioned, they're things you don't really use. Plumbing, electrical, partitioning, roofs, that's all stuff kind of you don't use every day. It's the stuff that you use every day. And there's far more than that. But there's a fantastic opportunity to be able to claim things that are more than 1,000, which is the normal rule, but less than 20,000 plus GST, and bring it forward and claim it this tax year before the 30th of June. As I said, it's got to be installed and ready for use. Now, I'm going to bring in the budget now because I think it's an important extension of this. The budget that happened fairly recently, in that you guys may or may not be aware of, the government is talking about extending the rules to 30 June 19. Now, I want to put a disclaimer out there on that because I spoke to a client literally the other day about this, and I said to him these exact words. He said to me, oh, look, I'm not sure if my stuff's going to be installed and ready for use by the 30th of June. And I said to him, make sure it is, because just because something's in a budget, it's not law. Things get changed, things get dropped out. Until it's legislated, it's not in place and locked in stone. So I've had examples where in prior budgets, A, it took 6 or 7 months to come in, B, sometimes that didn't come in at all, and C, sometimes it's changed, watered down, altered. Until it's actually law, you can't bank on it. So because I can't bank on it after 30th June at the moment, I would argue, don't worry about that one. If you can do it, if it's in that, the examples I've used for clients is if you're looking at doing some of this stuff in the next 6 to 12 months anyway, so you're looking at buying some desks or a table or lounge chairs or equipment or a server or anything, right? And you're going to do it anyway, why not bring it forward while you know it's law and have it installed and ready for use and paid for before the 30th of June and claim it? Because I think it's an amazing thing that small business owners have never had before, aside from the last 2 years. And I think it's an incredibly awesome thing you can play with as a business owner to potentially save a heap of tax this year and still do what you're going to do anyway. You just bring it forward a little bit, but up to a fairly high level. I mean, 19,999 plus GST is huge.
Yeah, there's a fair whack of stuff you can do with that.
Oh, absolutely. And so I really wanted to pause on this one and bring in a budget too and just say, this is an area I want you to really focus heavily on, because there's a lot of people I know, if you sit down and plan your business, you can probably do some really good things in this space between now and 30 June.
Yep, perfect. Awesome.
Another couple of things was, if you're thinking of refinancing an income-producing loan and to obtain a lower interest rate, et cetera, then why not potentially refinance that loan pre-30 June and claim the penalty interest this year? And consumables, so things like office supplies, stationery, et cetera, buy them. Now, you're meant to have them consumed within 3 months. That's the law. But I think there's a little bit of give and take in that. If you're, you know, considering buying some gifts for clients and suppliers, why not consider buying such gifts before the 30th of June? And the last thing I wanted to mention is super contributions. This is probably a good one that's done wrong a lot. And that is, in prior years, you've had an age-based deduction limit, right, that's been different for less than 50-year-olds and 50-plus, right? This year, it's the same for both, and it's 25 grand per year. So what that means is, if you're an employee of your business and you've been getting, obviously you would have been having your super contributions of 9.5% paid as an employee, please ensure that if you're going to top up your super, you make sure you factor in what you've had paid this year and the 9.5% and take that off your 25 and only pay the difference, because otherwise the ATO will hit you up with interest and penalties and all that for claiming more than you're entitled to. And there's a contributions reserving strategy. I'm not going to go through that. That's a one-on-one thing. But there is an option, an opportunity potentially, subject to quite a few criteria, to potentially claim 2 years' worth of super deductions of the 25 grand in this 1 year. But I'm not going to go through that now. I just wanted to throw that up as there is an option, but there's a lot of things, and that's something where you have to have a one-on-one chat about. The only other thing is, if you've sold a rental property or a business, please talk to me or whoever your advisor is before it gets past the 30th of June, because often there's things you can do to minimize the capital gains tax that you can't do after the 30th of June. And it's important to do an estimate on the capital gain and then have a strategy in place to minimize that capital gain, because once you turn past 30 June, it's too late. And also, just an important thing, capital gains are done on contract date, not settlement date, because that's one thing that people get wrong all the time. They come to me and go, oh, I don't have a capital gain this year. I said, oh, well, when did you settle? Oh, July. When did you sign your contract? May. Yeah, unfortunately, it's in the tax year. Sorry. Wish you'd come and spoke to me about it, because there's some things you can do to defer that, and there's other strategies you can do to minimise tax on that. So that's the only other thing I really wanted to mention, is about capital gains, because it's important to plan that around that as well.
Yeah, massively important. So, Adrian, we've covered a fair bit of territory, and obviously, you know, everything we've spoken about pertains largely to those people who own a business. What I'm curious to understand is, if there's people listening to this podcast who might be either an employee or a contractor, or, you know, depending on whatever arrangement that they have, is there anything specifically that you would add into the mix for those guys that they need to be mindful of and to consider?
Okay, in that space, I don't want to be too detailed, because it'll do everyone's heads in, but in relation to it, there's a thing called personal services income. Now, I'm in that category, Jesse's in that category, anyone who runs a service business is in that category, right? So the main thing is, and that's from an overall point of view, is if you want to be able to run your business through your choice of structure. Now, there's a heap of different structures, and I'm not going to get into that. But if you want to be able to run your business through your choice of structure, then it's really important to pass what I call the 80-20 test. Now, what that is you can't have more than 80% of your income from your business from one source. And that includes associates of that source. So, for example, Jesse was giving me income, but also I deal with Jesse's wife. Well, that's deemed to be one source, right? So in other words, associates is included as the part of the 80-20. You can't get around it by going, I'll get some income from that trust and some income from that company. You know, that's Jesse's and that's Jesse's wife. No, that doesn't get around that. So it's 80% or less has to be from one source. Now, I don't think there's going to be too many dentists or business owners out there who are going to have trouble with that one, right? Now, if you pass that one, what it means is, and this is really important, you're able to run your business through your choice of structure, and you're able to claim expenses, draw a salary, pay super, claim everything you're legally entitled to claim through the business once you pass that test. So for the majority of people out there, you're not going to have any issues running your business through your choice of structure and then being able to legally claim everything you're able to claim with some, obviously, some education from the right people.
So, Adrian, we have covered quite a bit of territory today in terms of structures, tax planning, deductions, different kinds of businesses, whether it's going to meet the PSI test and so on. Yeah, there's a ton of information there. And what I really want to try and do is to pull that together in a little bit of a summary for people who might be either driving or listening and thinking, okay, what's the next step? So if you were to summarize everything that we've gone through into a little two or three steps of an action plan, what would be your takeaway message for everyone listening to the show now?
In a nutshell, I think it's important. Let's talk in two levels. Level one is, right now, go over what I've covered with Jesse and seek the appropriate advice and the appropriate advisor for you, and put whatever strategies are appropriate for you in place before the 30th of June to minimize your tax this year. Second, and more importantly, because that's in the short term, right? Now I want to focus a bit more medium and long term. Think about things a little bit differently after today's call. What I want you to do is actually think about your situation based on what we've covered longer term, and go and seek the appropriate advice for you that factors in whether your structure's got the best asset protection, whether your assets are owned as best way they can for asset protection, whether your structure has got the most tax flexibility and minimization and flexibility. Then consider your longer term, because ultimately your business is a vehicle to generate cash. Okay, so the most important thing is have the right structure in place for asset protection and tax minimization and efficiency and effectiveness. Claim what you're legally entitled to claim, because I don't want to undersell that. That is massively important. Get advice on legally claiming everything you're entitled to claim for running your business. And there will be a lot you don't know about, I guarantee it. Then with what's left over, let's call it profit, after tax minimization and legal deductions, have a strategy in place to create wealth long-term for you and your family. And that strategy will probably include superannuation as part of that longer term, because superannuation is one of the most tax-effective ways of growing wealth. At the same time as you're doing all that, make sure you've covered off on all the downside in your business. So making sure that you review all your insurances, life insurance, income protection, income protection insurance and TPD insurance, trauma as well, and obviously your standard insurances for your business, clearly you've got to have covered as well. I was more talking about than non-business insurance that are still really important, as well as making sure you've got the appropriate powers of attorney in place, because there's lots of varieties of it. And then you can get into some more detailed things with your estate planning with wills, and you can get into a lot of other things, deeds of mutual wills and testamentary trusts and all these sorts of things that as a business owner and wealth creator, you're going to need. So it's important to as part of your strategizing, that not only do you review your strategy to grow your wealth, but also you review your risk mitigation strategy, which is in the majority of people not done. And I'm telling you, I've seen the downside of this. You have to do that at the same time. You have to make it all a priority. And one thing your advisor can do is A, be able to give you some support and advice in that space, and two, be able to hold you accountable.
Fantastic, mate. Hey, that's a really great summary. And I'm just going to add another little thing in there as well, which is if you are running a practice, then it really is the golden goose. And so make sure you keep the golden goose well fed as well. So focus in on the actual engine that drives that wealth. So Adrian, there's been so much gold there, so many practical, useful tips, very particular nitty-gritty actionable stuff. So, mate, thank you from all of us here at the Savvy Dentist Podcast. As always, it's a joy to have you on and to talk to you and learn from you and from all of us here. Once again, I really appreciate your time, buddy.
You're welcome, and it's been a pleasure imparting some of my passion and knowledge across to you and everyone out there.
You're a champ. Thanks, mate.
No worries. Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.